Welcome to Locked On NBA. On today's show, Nikola Jokic gets ejected for a nasty hit on Markieff Morris. Steph Curry goes for 50, and the latest on Ben Simmons.
You are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, it's Locked On NBA Tuesdays. I'm Wes Goldberg here with David Ramil. However you may be listening on YouTube, Odyssey, or wherever you get your podcasts, thank you for making Locked On NBA your first listen every day. Today's episode is brought to you by Rock Auto. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit rockauto.com, tell them Locked On sent you. Steph Curry puts up a 50 burger. The 76ers engage with trade talks with the Celtics, and the Bucks visit the White House. But we start today in Denver, where at the end of a blowout win over the Heat, Nikola Jokic takes a cheap shot at Markieff Morris, attacking him from the back at center court. It ends up spurring a brawl almost between both the Heat and the Nuggets. The Nuggets end up blowing out the Heat almost by 20 points. But that's not the story here, David. The story is Nikola Jokic, who was there, who was soon after ejected from the game. Jimmy Butler got a technical for his taunting at the Denver bench, threatening them to meet him in the back. Other players that were involved got technical fouls. But I think the story here is not the Nuggets getting a signature quality win over a really good opponent in the Miami Heat, but what happens with Nikola Jokic going forward, because what he did has no place in the ball in a basketball game.
Yeah, absolutely overshadows the Nuggets victory there. It kind of lets Miami off the hook too, because it was just some bad blood there. After the game, Eric Spoelstra called Nikola Jokic's foul a dangerous, dirty play. He really criticized Jokic. It seems like he was a little surprised. He doesn't really think of Jokic in that kind of way. And yet, I think it took a lot of us by surprise, because we know that Jokic has a temper. We know that he can be, you know, kind of gotten to at some point. But it seemed like he just took it out on Morris. Look, Morris did deliver a hard foul prior to that to stop the clock, but it seemed like a particularly egregious response from Jokic to just kind of go at, you know, with his full 280-plus pounds behind and to lunge at Markieff Morris there directly into his back. We saw Morris's back, neck snap backwards, and he lay crumpled up on the ground for several minutes. They actually wheeled out a stretcher, tried to take Morris back. Eventually, he was able to get up and walk off as his own powers. But for a few minutes there, he was just clutching at his hands there, trying to get some sensation back. A scary overall incident there. And again, an ugly one too, because both teams were going at each other. It seemed like it was starting to get a little bit more. It could have gone much worse. Could have gone into a full complete brawl there. But as far as the NBA retaliation to Jokic, I think it has to be clear. Like, I understand he gets fouled. I understand he's going to get contact, you know, at some points, because he's just a larger body. That's just the nature of the game for somebody like that. But what he did was just, it was dangerous. It was dirty. He just totally attacked the player when his back was turned, and it could have been a lot worse. It could have been, you know, it could have been a serious back or neck injury that could have cost Morris's career, if not worse. And so given everything that's at stake, I would assume it's probably a one-game suspension. Now, Jokic was ejected for an unsportsmanlike technical foul. It wasn't like he got a flagrant two or anything like that. Morris actually wound up getting, surprisingly, a flagrant two issued against him, and he was ejected. If he hadn't been injured anyway, he was going to get thrown out of the game, apparently. Jokic was thrown out for his unsportsmanlike call. He has to get suspended for at least a game there. I'm not sure what Denver's schedule is like. Yeah, but the NBA can't allow those kinds of things to happen.
You can't. And for anybody that says, Markieff Morris, he obviously deserved it. He got a flagrant two for the call. That's just not true. I mean, you have the flagrant system, the flagrant foul system in place in order to penalize players for harder than usual, harder than normal fouls. Yeah, that's the penalty. That, you know, is receiving then the flagrant two. The penalty is not getting snapped in the back, getting, you know, cheap shotted by a guy twice your size. And Markieff Morris is a big guy. Nikola Jokic is huge. There is no place for that. The NBA has to step in. This is a guy also with a track record. Let's keep this in mind, that he was ejected in an elimination game for the Nuggets last year during the playoffs. I mean, this is not the first time he's lost his temper. And the NBA, the Nuggets, first of all, should do something too. The Nuggets should fine him, suspend him, do something for disciplinary reasons. The NBA needs to double down on whatever that is, because at some point he needs to be taught that this is just not okay. He's gotten better, right? How many stories have you read, David, about, hey, Nikola Jokic is matured and he's gotten better over the years. And he's an MVP. He's a reigning MVP. He's obviously gotten better at it to some sort of extent. But even just these small little glimpses, these small little flare-ups in this temper, there's it's not just detrimental to his team and detrimental to the playoff chances like they were last year, but now it's starting to endanger other players on the floor. And that's when the Nuggets as an organization, and that's when the NBA as an organization has to step in. And I would expect a fine, I would expect a suspension, and I'd expect some sort of apology from Nikola Jokic, because he did look a little regretful on the bench. He was trying to cool off. I thought he looked a little, his teammates did not look regretful. Nuggets fans chanting MVP did, but I think there was a little bit of a cool down and a, oh boy, I probably shouldn't have done that. Whether he's worried for Markieff Morris or his own well-being as far as his suspension and maybe his pocketbook are a different thing, but something's got to give here.
I can't see Jokic issuing an apology again. He probably feels perfectly justified having, you know, been delivered a hard foul. I know he was probably upset with Bam Adebayo being physical with him all night, and probably, you know, in Jokic's view, fouling him on several possessions. Again, Morris delivered a hard but not egregious foul either. Like, he didn't hit his head, he didn't attack him in any kind of just, you know, strange way or anything like that. He just delivered a hard foul to stop the clock. It was a direct.
Let's say he did.
Purposeful. Yeah. I mean, you're right.
Still no point. Like, let's say he did accidentally hit him in the head and he got the flagrant two, like he did anyway. Like I said, like, that stuff is accidental, but that is just so far and away from accidental. That is, it's borderline criminal what he did.
Well, the Nuggets aren't going to penalize him either. I mean, Michael Malone is not going to upset his MVP player. I know. From Nuggets fans' perspective, it's like, you don't want to upset a guy entering free agency at some point, and you don't want to alienate him or say, oh, they didn't have his back or anything like that.
Well, wouldn't you want to teach him, like again, this was endangering the Miami Heat player. So I guess if you're the Denver Nuggets, but like internally you should be like, well, if this is going to continue happening, and this happens in a high stakes moment, not when we're up 20, but maybe when it's a close game in the postseason, like I think at some point you would want to punish him.
I get it, but at the same time, you know, understand what's at stake here. The kind of egos that you have to massage and manage for Michael Malone, it's not an easy job, but he has to say, look, that same competitive fire that we need from Nikola is what makes him the great player that he is. We can't curb that particularly. Like, it just gets away from him at times, and that's probably how they'll justify it, at least publicly. Maybe they'll probably say something, but we talked to him. He's understood that, you know, he shouldn't be doing things like that, kind of like a child. You know, he's been reprimanded internally and things of that sort. They don't want to shame him publicly or anything like that. But
I see where you're coming from. I do, and I agree. I don't think that they will, but I think that they ought to. And if there is a coach that can get away with it, it would be somebody like Michael Malone, who has been in place for a long time and has had a lot of success in that organization and kind of has that reputation for being a little bit of a hard ass, right? Like, he's got that Northeastern type of vibe. He's that whole thing. I think if there's not a lot of coaches who can get away with it, he's one of them, and he should probably do something, because I think this is not a good moment, and it's ugly for Jokic. It's ugly for Denver. It's ugly for Denver's fans. It's ugly for the entire league. But if you are the Nuggets, I think there's an opportunity to almost harness this and turn this into something that could be meaningful and even constructive. And I think if you're Michael Malone and you're that's the challenge that you have here, not just moving past it and hoping your MVP is available. It's turning this into something that can help your MVP grow even more.
Yeah. I mean, that's the hope, right? Look, they've seen maturation from him on the court. He's evolved into a much more aggressive scorer. They need that kind of offense from him. But at the same time, he has to be able to find a way to curb these incredibly rash responses, especially if they're going to cost him. And as you mentioned earlier, if they're going to jeopardize the health of another player, that's just not good. It could have gone into a really ugly situation. Again, we saw a lot of tension there from both teams, you know, as Nuggets players were kind of laughing it off and kind of just saying, oh, you know, Jokic did what was expected of him to do. Jimmy Butler wanted to launch into a fight there, calling out players, asking him to join him in the locker room or meet him off the court. Who knows what Udonis Haslem or Bam Adebayo might have been doing if things had gone progressively worse. It could have turned into a really ugly situation. I know a lot of people want to just write it off and say, oh, basketball players don't get into a fight or anything. They don't actually fight. But it could have turned ugly. You don't want another Malice at the Palace type situation.
You don't. And luckily it wasn't that bad, but it was still it's still pretty ugly. And we'll see what happens. But coming up next, we get to some other scores from around the NBA. from Monday night, and then debate, are the Warriors for real? But first, let's talk about Truebill. From forgotten free trials to automatic renewals, when big companies keep charging you, Truebill is your secret weapon to save you money on subscriptions you don't need. Truebill is the new app that helps you identify and stop paying for subscriptions that you don't need, want, or simply forgot about. On average, people save up to $720 a year with Truebill. Because companies make subscriptions hard to cancel, Truebill makes it incredibly simple. Just link your accounts and Truebill will cancel your unwanted subscriptions in one tap. And your Truebill concierge is there when you need them to cancel unwanted subscriptions, so you don't have to. Truebill has over 2 million users and helped save them over $100 million. So don't fall for a subscription scam. Start canceling today at Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. Go right now, Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. It could save you thousands a year. Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. Today's episode is also brought to you by Prize Picks, daily fantasy made easy. And easy is really what they are all about. As fantasy props and pick'ems get more popular, Prize Picks is making it easy for you to get involved. They do that with the best NBA DFS prop game on the market, offering more NBA props than any other DFS prop operator. This includes the Prize Picks Power Play. Here's how it works. Predict the over-under on a player's fantasy production, and you can win up to 10x on any entry, and it's just you versus the projected fantasy totals. If you're a total sports junkie, Prize Picks even allows mixed sports entries. For example, you could take the over on LeBron's score combined with the under on Patrick Mahomes's in that same entry. And when you use the promo code NBA, you're going to get a 100% instant deposit match up to $100. Again, just use that promo code NBA. Do it all using the award-winning app on the Apple App Store or Google Play. Entries could be made within 60 seconds or less. It's that easy. Plus, PrizePicks is safe and offers you fast withdrawals. So don't hesitate. Check out PrizePicks.com and use the promo code NBA or go to your app store and download the app today. PrizePicks is daily fantasy made easy. All right, thank you for making Locked On NBA your first listen every day. We are free and available on all platforms, so please do subscribe. Let's get to quickly some other scores from around the NBA. We're starting with some of the East Coast action. The Knicks beat the 76ers 103-96. Julius Randle, 31 points, 12 rebounds, and 3 assists. In Chicago, the Brooklyn Nets fell to the Bulls 118-95. Kevin Durant, 38 points, 10 rebounds, 4 assists. DeMar DeRozan leading Chicago with 28 points. Zach LaVine getting 25 points also for the Bulls. David, some concerns about Brooklyn. You don't want to take away too much from the Bulls. They get a quality signature win there at home. But I'm telling you, man, this Nets team, I know they're 7-4. I know they have all the talent. I know they're still missing Kyrie. But I know that we tend to give them the benefit of the doubt. But just something doesn't look quite right to me with them.
No, they're relying entirely too much on Kevin Durant. That's not why you join a big three, to be honest with you, so you can be the singularly great player on that team. You expect other all-stars and Hall of Fame level players to be able to support you offensively, and that's just not the case. You shouldn't lose by 23 points and on a night when you score almost 40. Like that's ridiculous to me. That's like indicative of, like, you know, what is it, a looter and a riot kind of numbers. That's not who Kevin Durant is. That's not who these Nets are. And at the same time, he's putting up these big numbers, carrying this team single-handedly at this point. Yeah, getting good contributions from Patty Mills. LaMarcus Aldridge had 19 points on the night, so a solid shooting night from him. But that's not what Durant joined his team for. No. They've got bigger fish to fry. They've got a bigger goal of trying to win a championship, and this team just does not look ready. Like, Harden had a nice play early in the game, and you kind of think, oh, maybe we're going to start to see a regression to the player he's been in the past. He got a couple of free throws there. It seemed like maybe he was a little bit more engaged than usual. Wound up just crapping the bed after that. 4 of 11 from the floor, 3 of 7 from three-point range, only 3 trips to the line. So not a great night for him. He needs to step it up. At this point, they're just letting him off the hook. I know a lot of their focus on the team and fans has been on Kyrie and when he'll return, but you've got a Hall of Famer there who's allegedly playing, and he's not doing his end of the, he's not holding up his end of the bargain either.
No, I mean, you're right, Kevin. This doesn't look like the team's Kevin Durant left, right? I mean, that is painfully obvious. You hesitate to go so far as to say that he made a mistake leaving Golden State, but kind of feels like he made a mistake leaving Golden State at this point, because
they look pretty good.
They look good. We'll talk about them here in a minute, but Kevin Durant went to Brooklyn to play with Kyrie Irving, hasn't really played with Kyrie Irving. He's playing with James Harden, but you kind of need all three of those guys for this thing to work. And I know that they were close in the playoffs with basically only 1.5 of their stars. I know that they still have a ton of talent, that James Harden and Kevin Durant, a lot of people would say, hey, man, that should be enough, right? Like, that should be enough. But they're not very good defensively. So far this year, they haven't been very good offensively. That has much more to do with Harden. Kevin Durant is putting up MVP type of numbers right now. He's borderline unstoppable. But, like, you need to be historically great in order to win a championship in a league that has a lot of really good teams right now, right. A lot of competitive teams. I think you need to be historically great offensively, and I just don't see where that's coming, especially if you're going to be this bad defensively. And I'm watching them on offense, and a lot of times, David, just feels like it's either the entire offense is basically two plays, Kevin Durant isolation, or Bruce Brown sets a screen, and that's and then something else happens, and that's right. It. That's the entire offense. So I've got my doubts. Steve Nash, Kevin Durant, James Harden, they need to come together and figure out what it is, because I think it's going to take more than just James Harden getting this scoring to come around. I really do. I think they've got some other structural issues, especially because you can't really rely on Kyrie Irving ever coming back.
Is this more of a big 1.5 than a big 3 at this point?
Depends on what you think of Joe Harris, I guess. I don't know. I really don't know. All right, moving on. The Mavericks destroy the Pelicans 108-92. The Pelicans now 1-10. I think this was their seventh straight loss, if I'm not mistaken. Mavericks, a good win by them. 25 points for Luka Doncic, 5 rebounds and 5 assists. But still the Pelicans without Zion. They are 9 games now below 500. By far the worst start in the league. I think the panic meter, if you're not already slamming that button, you should be, people in New Orleans. And then moving on, the Suns get a 109-104 win over the Kings. So a nice win for them. Devin Booker, 18 points, 9 rebounds, and 6 assists. And then a wild finish in Memphis. The Grizzlies get a 125-118 win over the Timberwolves. This was nuts, David, because the Minnesota Timberwolves led by 16 with 7 minutes and 20 seconds left in the game. Memphis rallies, evens the game. Ja Morant gets a 3-pointer, gets a dunk. He ties the game. The games goes the you get turnovers back and forth. Memphis fails to call a timeout to advance the ball. They lose the ball out of bounds. Minnesota gets it back. The D'Angelo Russell tries to get a layup, gets to the basket, throws up the layup. Jaren Jackson Jr. blocks it. It's initially called a goaltend. Reverse the call on the floor. They're still tied. All hell's breaking loose. Zach Lowe tweeted it was like a drunk guy outside the bar. Singing a song, and that's kind of how this entire game felt. But
sounds like my Friday night.
It sounds like my weekends. But the highlight of the game was Karl Anthony Towns throwing up a prayer from 3-point range to tie the game. He does, sends the game into overtime. You think maybe Minnesota has enough momentum at that point to get the win, eke it out. But no, the Grizzlies, they find a way to hang on. John Morant, 33 points, 6 rebounds, and 8 assists. He keeps his scoring run going. A really incredible finish there in Memphis.
And overlooking a huge performance from Brandon Clark, who's been struggling to find any kind of playing time. Do we have any kind of explanation?
Huge tip-ins for him in overtime.
Yeah, I know he hasn't been getting a lot of minutes. Has there ever been any kind of real determination as to why he's not getting playing time? Because it seems like he's just still a quality player, just as he was last year. It has been since he joined the league, but yet just doesn't seem to be able to crack the rotation.
From what I understand, our friend Sean Coleman over at Locked On Grizzlies, there's a little bit of inconsistencies, defensive stuff there. The athleticism is undeniable, but especially when, you know, you've had Jonas Valanciunas there for the last couple of years. You have Steven Adams there. He needs playing time. And then the season really is all about finding out if Jaren Jackson is sort of your second star, the co-star, or not. But to your point, Brandon Clark down the stretch almost outplayed Jaren Jackson. I thought Jaren Jackson got a little in his head, got a little wild at the end there, and Brandon Clark was the guy with the two big tip-ins in overtime that kind of separated Memphis from Minnesota. All right, final score here. The Warriors 127-113, beating the Hawks. The Warriors are now 9-1. Steph Curry, 50 points, 10 assists, and 7 rebounds. Now, the Warriors have one of the best records in the NBA, if not the best record in the NBA now. They do, actually, the best record in the NBA. So good for the Warriors. But I think we need to push the brakes a little bit on Golden State because their schedule so far has been really, really soft. And this game against Atlanta, David, I thought was at home. It was at Chase Center. But I thought it kind of represented their first real test since a fully stocked Lakers team on opening night. Since then, they really haven't had a tough game. This is a team that's number one in the league in net rating, have one of the top offenses, the top defense. But I kind of wanted to see whether or not this team was for real. And against Atlanta, a little adversity early. Steph Curry gets hurt, has to leave the right. first quarter, midway through the first quarter. It's a tight game, back and forth. But that they get a huge third quarter from Steph and the rest of the Warriors, and they break away. I'm not ready to say that this team is for real, but I'm still pretty confident in them. And I'll tell you why, because even if that start wasn't for real, even if they're not 9-1 good, they now have the confidence of a team that's 9-1 good. And I think for a team that's missed the playoffs 2 years in a row, that's really important. They've got a nice little stage that they've set themselves up early in the season here.
Yeah, no, one of my pet peeves is kind of this dismissal of strong performances from either individual players or teams because it's a small sample and things of that sort. It's usually the beginnings of something good. Like, yes, something can always derail it. And I think that could happen even if it's a good stretch down in the middle of the season or towards the end of the season. Who knows? We've seen teams that play really well at the end of the season. It's kind of similar to this Warriors team. And then they just kind of fall apart in the playoffs or even in the play-in tournament. So it's not unusual for that to happen, but you can't just dismiss what they've done because, you know, they're 9-1. That's the best record in the league. They've kind of carved out this new identity as a great defensive team. They're getting, of course, some really MVP-level production from, of course, Steph Curry. Draymond Green continues to be energized as a defensive leader on this team. It's a really well-rounded group. It just looks like they've made some nice additions and continue to develop young players. I know we've gotten a lot of publicity about Gary Payton Jr. He's been a solid role player as well. It just looks like a good group. And we're kind of overlooking them. I feel like it's just they're not as exciting as they once were because they're not taking the league by storm in this new level of dynamic kind of three-point shooting and things of that sort, although that's still certainly a part of their identity. But the fact is they've got a potential Hall of Fame player waiting in the wings who's going to come back at some point to only add to the greatness of this group already. I think, yes, there's potential for that, the addition of Klay Thompson to kind of upset what this team is doing right now. He's certainly going to change the rotation to some degree. But I think you can only add a talented player like Klay and just continue to get better. I'm sure they'll find a way to figure it out.
Yeah, look, like I said, their schedule has been just a cakewalk so far, right? I mean, they've got the league's best defense by a mile right now. It's a pretty clear gap here between number one and number two, which is Denver. But like I said, like the Lakers are the only tough team that they played. They played a shorthanded Clippers team in their second game, and then it was Sacramento, Oklahoma City, Memphis, Oklahoma City, Charlotte, New Orleans, Houston, Atlanta. So look, I think up until Atlanta, a bunch of really lousy offensive teams. We just talked about how bad New Orleans was. So I don't think their defense is the best in the league. I don't think it's that good. I would take Utah's over it. I would take Miami's over it. In the long run, I would take Milwaukee's over it. There are other defenses that I would take over Golden States. But if they can just I think this is a legit top 8, 9, or 10 defense in the league when it's all said and done, when you start playing real offenses that can actually score points, I still think that this is going to be a really good defense. And you mentioned Klay Thompson coming back at some point. He's only going to be a boost. They're getting really good minutes from Gary Payton II, who is an absolute stud defensively. He's given them enough offensively where they've figured out how to use him. Andre Iguodala has given them some new life on that end. They're still getting contributions from guys like Wiggins, Otto Porter, Juan Toscano-Anderson, Kevon Looney, all these guys. I do wonder if the injury bug starts to hit them a little bit, if they are lacking in depth, but
sure,
whatever. Like right now, I think you've got a really good defensive team. Offensively, Steph has done enough. You wonder if this 50-point game was one of these games that can kind of break him out of it's weird to call it even a slump, but he was averaging like 23 points a game coming into tonight. Right. So he's basically had two good shooting games all night. He had the 45-point game against the Clippers and then this 51. But you wonder if he can get back to that MVP type of production. Then if that's the case and you're getting stuff from Jordan Poole and eventually Klay, then yeah, you're going to be much better than what they finished last year, which was 20th in offensive rating. You might end up top 10 in both categories. And if you are, then you're a legit contender in the Western Conference, I think.
Well, that was my question, right? I think a lot of people don't see them as such just yet, but I think that they certainly have that potential to fill out.
Well, I think this next stretch is gonna tell us a lot more than this last stretch, right? I mean, nice win against Atlanta, But then you play Minnesota and Chicago to wrap up this eight-game homestand. Yeah. And then you go onto a four-game road trip, Charlotte, Brooklyn, Cleveland, Detroit. Cleveland's been playing well. They're going to lose Colin Sexton here for a little bit. Detroit's no good. But Charlotte, Brooklyn, Chicago, those are real games. Minnesota, like, those are real games. So, I think we'll learn a little bit more about the Warriors over this next week and a half or so.
Absolutely.
All right. Let's talk a little bit more Ben Simmons, because I don't think we do that enough here in the NBA media scene. We'll do that. And maybe a potential trade with the Celtics for Jaylen Brown. We'll debate that next. But first, David, tell them about Rock Auto.
Well, I mean, it's only a family-owned business that's been serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. It's a great place. Their easy-to-navigate website allows you to find the parts that you're looking for your car or truck with just a few easy clicks. You get them delivered directly and safely to your door. Look, you can go to a traditional chain storefront. They can ask you questions. You're not happy. You're uncomfortable. Maybe they don't know what you're talking about, and they find the parts that they happen to carry in their warehouse on their computer. Why go through all that? You've got access to a computer on your phone or at home, which means you've got access to rockauto.com. Again, whether you're saving money as a do-it-yourselfer or a mechanic, their low prices are the same for everybody, so everybody can take advantage. That's amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. That's rockauto.com. And we'll go to that section that says, how did you hear about us? And write the phrase Locked On so they know we sent you.
All right, back here with Locked On NBA. I'm Wes Goldberg here with David Ramil. All right, let's get to this Ben Simmons stuff. So The Athletic, Shams Charania, had a report Monday afternoon that Ben Simmons is seeing medical professionals about what he is saying is he's not medically ready to play. He's not, or I'm sorry, not mentally ready to play for the 76ers. And then the controversy that ensues after that, the Sixers are asking Ben Simmons to provide more information, not just the doctors that he's seeing, not just the specialists that he's seeing, but right, what the procedures that they are undergoing, what kind of treatment he is getting, what a potential timeline might be for his return to the team. And if he doesn't provide that information, that they are threatening to resume the fines for missing shoot-arounds, practices, and games. We'll talk about that here in a little bit. I want to dive a little bit deeper into that and some of the problems that I have with this entire conflict between player and organization. But the thing that's gotten pulled out of that report that the entire internet was running with was a brand new trade rumor, David. And this one was that the 76ers have engaged in trade talks with the Boston Celtics. It's not clear what the level of those trade talks are, what the activity right now is as you and I are sitting here talking and as our listeners are listening to this. But the trade that was discussed potentially was something for Jaylen Brown. Jaylen Brown for Ben Simmons. Your thoughts on something like that for Philadelphia and for Ben Simmons?
For Philadelphia? I mean, it would be a solid trade for Philadelphia, obviously. I think, from what we've heard, I think I saw a report. I can't confirm exactly who it was from, but from what I saw, it was an astronomical package that Philadelphia was asking for. Something like a combination of Jaylen Brown and or Marcus Smart and somebody else, and it was just a lot to ask for, and I think that was a little ridiculous. It just seems like Philadelphia keeps playing this game.
I don't know if any of that stuff was real. I saw some tweets. I think some of that might have been like fake accounts. I don't know. But you think it would be like Jaylen Brown for Ben Simmons? Like, if you're the Celtics, do you even touch that based on everything that's going on with Ben Simmons right now?
No, that's what I've seen. I've seen a lot of Celtics fans think it's absolutely ridiculous to entertain any kind of a trade for Ben Simmons. I won't go that far. He's obviously a very, very good player. I think they want to add him to Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown rather than have one of them replace what Ben Simmons can do. So I like the move for Boston. I don't like it necessarily for – I mean, I like the move for Philadelphia, not necessarily for Boston. But I think – look, go ahead.
No, I agree with you. Look, I think Jaylen Brown would be a slam dunk. I mean, you're getting a 25-point-per-game scorer who's a 40% three-point shooter. You could at the wing spot, you could put him next to Joel Embiid. That's way better than the CJ McCollums that we're talking about. That's way better, like any of these other type, the Buddy Hield type of packages, the D'Angelo Russell type of packages. Give me a young guy with, you know, already who is a fringe all-star with perennial all-star potential. Absolutely, that's a slam dunk. If you're the Celtics, no, I don't do that. Even if you think that Marcus Smart isn't going to get along with that locker room long-term and maybe you actually need a long-term answer at point guard, I could see that as a reason if you're the Boston Celtics. And hey, like at the end of the day, can Jaylen Brown be maximized playing next to Jason Tatum? Can Jason Tatum be a guy who's on the ball all the time, or does he need a genius level point guard the way that Ben Simmons is, right? Somebody who can just run the offense and get Jason Tatum off the ball and just let him be a scorer. Like, I think that's the question if you're Brad Stevens and if you're the Celtics front office that you're asking yourself. But as far as the cost just being Jaylen Brown, no, I wouldn't go that far. And I just think that that's why it's not that interesting to me, honestly. I know that the internet like to run with this all day, David, but I see this as just another trade rumor. It's just another CJ McCollum. It's another Bradley Beal. It's another Damian Lillard. Like, next week it'll be another player, potentially. Okay. I don't buy the report that this is the report didn't say that these are active trade talks right now. It just sounds like right. It was something that was discussed. I don't think that they are actively talking about it right now. That's not my reporting. I just don't see it making sense right now for the Celtics to make this move, given what Ben Simmons is going through right now. And that, to me, is quite honestly the more interesting thing here. And like I said, Jaylen Brown, just another trade rumor. But this is sort of the topic I wanted to tackle with you, David, because I'm getting very uncomfortable about the way that mental health is being used as a political football in this Ben Simmons v 76ers situation right now. Because, look, Ben Simmons did everything he could and is doing everything he can to try to get out of Philly, whether it was not reporting to camp or even before that, not showing up to team meetings, not allowing his teammates and coaches to fly out to LA to meet him, not showing up to all this stuff, and then actually showing up to practice and refusing to actually participate in drills. I mean, he has done whatever it is in the playbook, if it's the Jimmy Butler playbook, the James Harden playbook, whatever it was, he's tried it all and he's failed at all of it. And then all of a sudden on October 22nd, he has a meeting with the 76ers and claims that he is dealing with mental health issues. And I'm not saying that he isn't mentally capable, ready to play, because based on what we saw in the playoffs last year, a basketball player who does not want to shoot the ball, that is the kind of situation where maybe a player is dealing with mental health issues, right? Like that makes sense to me, right? That checks out. But it didn't come up then, and it didn't come up now. And I'm not necessarily saying that Ben Simmons is lying here. I guess I question the motives and I question the method here. And then from the 76ers perspective, like their skepticism, asking for more information and all of that, I get it. Threatening him with resuming the fines and all that. I just find all of it very curious. But what makes me really uncomfortable here is that Philadelphia is trying to call him out as opposed to trying to deal with it. That Ben Simmons is just sort of coming up with this, coming with this to the table all of a sudden, as opposed to maybe earlier in the entire process. I just don't like how it's being played out, because the problem is, you've got now a tug of war happening between organization and star player, and the battleground is the issue of mental health. And I think it really runs contrary to all the good work that guys like Kevin Love, DeMar DeRozan have done in speaking out about this and just letting this issue be a pure issue, as opposed to something that's, like I said, being used as a political football in order for two different parties to advance their own personal agendas.
It sets a really, really bad precedent, because the topic of mental health has only become part of the mainstream conversation in the NBA for just a few years now, and partly because of the efforts of those players like DeRozan, Love, and others. Whereas before, I don't think it was even strongly considered. And then, you know, it kind of forced the league's hand to maybe hire some health professionals, to hire somebody within the team. Each team is supposed to have a mental health professional on board. I'm not sure that every team is following that protocol. In fact, even in the report from Charania, it said that Ben Simmons didn't find any of their mental health professionals or anybody that they are currently on staff at Philadelphia he's comfortable working with them, and that's why he had to go find somebody else to deal with. So it kind of, it just feels really creepy. And I know that might be not the right word for this, but like, as an employer, they shouldn't be like, oh, are you really sick? Are you really upset or depressed or going through any kind of issues? It's like, for them to call out Simmons. And I know a lot of Philadelphia fans will say, well, he's an employee. He signed a contract. If it falls under any kind of, you know, heading of health or anything like that, that they have a right to those kinds of records. I don't know if I necessarily agree here. I don't know. If whatever he's discussed with a psychologist or any team of mental health practitioners, should it be something that the coaching staff has is privy to, or that Daryl Morey is privy to? Like, he shouldn't be able to read through a psychologist or mental health practitioner's records and say, oh yeah, no, clearly, you know, Ben Simmons has whatever things that he's going through. And so that's the bigger problem here, is that they don't believe him. And I know, look, this has been such a contentious thing from the start here, ever since last summer, but it's just, something has to change here, and I don't think the Sixers are willing to budge. We keep coming to the same point. I know you were kind of joking that we've been talking about Simmons quite a bit, actually, but this is just getting to a really bad place. Again, a really bad precedent for how they're interacting with one another, and it's like, just, you're holding him hostage at this point. You're not going to get back any kind of sense of fair return. You're not helping your team. In fact, you're probably hurting them consistently. Wouldn't you rather have just, like, even if it's nickels on a dime or something like that, something, pennies on a dollar, in order for you to be able to just have something on the floor, as opposed to like a disgruntled and perhaps even somebody who's going through some mental health issues, Ben Simmons? Like, at this point, you want to see yourself as a title contender. Well, then do your goddamn job, Morey. You're not doing it right now. You're not helping your team whatsoever.
It's not like Ben, first of all, it doesn't sound like Ben Simmons is ever going to play for Philadelphia. He's going to find a way to never play for that team again.
Right.
And even if he were to play, in what world do you think he's actually going to help his trade value at this point? Because that's the argument. If you're Philadelphia, it's like, we want him to play so that he can increase his trade value, help you. And that's always the argument by the organization, is help us help you get out on the floor, play really well, and you can increase your trade value based on, you know, versus, you know, your performance against Atlanta, which was very bad. I don't see this version of Ben Simmons, who is just clearly not ready to play. He's probably not in condition, right? Like, he's obviously not mentally ready to play. He said it himself. I don't see any world where he actually helps his trade value, even if he gets on the court. You're right. They should just, it's starting to go from just dysfunctional and annoying to, again, it's starting to get a little ugly, and I don't like where this is headed. And at some point, if we're going to start using mental health as a political football, then somebody has to intervene here. Because if you're going to intervene on something as harmless as tanking, right, in the process, then maybe the NBA can intervene on something like this, because this is actually dangerous to the way we have this conversation. This has actual real stakes.
Can you imagine if mental health was used to gain leverage in, like, negotiations? It's like, well, I found out from your psychologist that you actually have, like, you know, maternal issues or something like that. I'm not going to offer you the full max now because of what I read in your psychologist report. Like,
this is not a road anybody wants to go down.
Absolutely not. Especially not for the NBA.
Well, the 76ers play a game tonight on the second night of a back-to-back. They do face the Milwaukee Bucks on TNT. The Milwaukee Bucks, who visited the White House on Monday. This is the first time an NBA team visited the White House since Barack Obama was president. No NBA team visited the White House during the Trump administration because of, Trump and you know, his policies not really jibing with NBA players and their beliefs either. So your thoughts on getting a White House visit from Giannis and company?
Sure. I mean, it's fine. I guess it's just part of the tradition. I know for a lot of the players, it feels like a big deal to be kind of recognized and stuff like that. I guess it's just, it's fine. I feel like there's already too much commingling of political issues and sports whatsoever. I'm absolutely fine with players being able to voice whatever political concerns they may have from either side of the spectrum. But I don't know if I necessarily like this ongoing tradition myself. I mean,
you're not much for pomp and circumstance.
I am not. I certainly don't necessarily care for the national anthem being sung needlessly before sporting events, and I certainly don't care for players being invited there. No, it's not. Like if we're going to hold it against players for kneeling or protesting or anything like that, like, why is it included in the first place? I know that's a larger conversation, and I know I probably alienated a fair amount of listeners or viewers at this point, but you know what? We're kind of seeing them mix for no reason, in my opinion. Yeah. So.
No, you're right. I mean, it goes hand in hand with what we were just
talking
about.
Were you excited about seeing Giannis Antetokounmpo and seeing his journey standing at the podium there? Okay, well, there you go.
I was. That to me, it is a big moment for these players. You talk to, you know, I covered the Warriors for a couple of years, and they would talk a lot about those not getting an opportunity to visit the White House and how they really wanted to during those dynasty years, right? When Trump was in office, and it was just something that they wanted to do, but it just wasn't going to happen under that administration. and they didn't want to do it with him in office. And I think they missed that ability to be able to do that. I think they really wanted to do something like that. And to see Giannis, given his story and everything that he's gone through, to see that Bucks organization and how much adversity that they had to go through, you know, getting so close over and over and over again to finally break through, it is a kind of cool thing to just see that at the very end. It's sort of like at the end of the Super Bowl, I'm going to Disney World. It's just, I like that. I like that something just has to feel good. We don't have to make a big deal about it. And it could just be a nice moment, a nice photo op, and then we can all just smile and move on about our days and not have a big debate about it. I like those kinds of moments because we're just not getting a whole lot of that right now in today's sporting world, unfortunately. So
I guess that's fair.
All right, that'll do it for us today. Remember to subscribe to new episodes of Locked On NBA wherever you listen to podcasts for 30 minutes of the NBA's top stories every day. We'll be back here on next Tuesday. In the meantime, you can find both of us over at Locked On Heat. Thanks for making Locked On NBA your first listen every day. Now make your second listen, Locked On Fantasy Basketball. Josh Lloyd hosts the number one fantasy basketball show on the planet. It's free and it's available on all platforms.
You are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.